This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. It is time for the Kenai Conversation. I am Jenny Nyman, and today we are talking trees. We've got Mitch Michaud in the studio today, who is retired now, so he's just kind of a tree counselor, grief counselor for all of us who are losing trees in our yards. And I learned a new word today. So technically, your last position was a silviculturist.
Very good.
Did I say?
Very
good. Yay. I wrote it down phonetically. I'm sure that's not how it's actually spelled. So what exactly is a silviculturist?
Silviculture is the study of growing trees from life to death. And it's not logging, it's Sylvie is the Latin name for a tree. Like Silvix is a study of trees, and a lot of plants are called, like, there's a Sylvaticum that's kind of a moss that has a tree moss.
Oh, yeah, okay. Latin, fun. So, and you did that for the, were you with the Forest Service then? Was that your last one?
My last position was, I was 3.5 years with the U.S. Forest Service. And before then, I was 20 years with the Natural Resource Conservation Service.
So you have a couple of tree rings worth of experience.
Oh, yeah. I was figuring out the other day. I says, oh, you know, I've worked with trees for over 30 years. Doesn't even count the times my parents dragged me out there to dig them up and transplant them when I was a kid.
So we're going to talk tree health, tree changes, tree issues, sicknesses, blights, problems that our local tree populations are having. And if you have questions for Mitch, feel free to give us a call at 283-8414. Otherwise, I'm sure I can keep you talking for an hour because they, you know, you might not think much about them just wandering by or driving by, but trees are pretty fascinating.
Yep, they are. They're around us. You know, that's kind of one of the reasons we're here. I mean, if not, we probably would all move to Nome or something. But trees are interesting because when you have too many of them, you want to get rid of them. And then, because that's the first thing the pilgrims did when they arrived. You made it look like Britain because they had already cut down all of the trees.
Oh, right.
And the first thing you do when you get to Alaska is you cut down trees. And now everybody's in a tizzy about we're losing all of our trees.
Yep. Yeah, it's up north, of course, in the tundra. I mean, trees for them are like knee-height, scrubby little things. And I'm from southeast in Wrangell, and they have a program where they take kids from all over the state and bring them out on this canoe paddling adventure kind of thing. And so if you happen to be at the airport when the new crop of kids come in from Nome or Bethel or wherever and get off the plane in southeast Alaska and walk out into the rainforest, and like the look on their face when they see a tree of that size for the first time in their life is kind of entertaining. Like, what is that thing?
Right. Yeah, you see them. I know folks that travel the Hall Road heading north. There used to be a sign where the most furthest tree was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then somebody cut it down.
Oh.
But then they found another one much further north.
It's kind of, yeah, as climate change progresses, it's like the signs noting where the glaciers used to be as they mm-hmm. recede, like the signs noting where the last right. tree used to be. It's probably going to move as well. So maybe that's a place to start, just as an overview of our forests in general. They're kind of changing a little bit as climate is... Yeah, it's changing their ecosystem. It's not certainly an overnight change, although, you know, if you get a fire, that's a pretty, overnight change to our forests. But just kind of like overall 10,000 foot, 10,000 year level, maybe, what kind of trends in our forests are we seeing?
When you go about 10,000 years ago, we didn't really have any trees.
Good point.
But that's a good way to start because it leads to some other things that we can talk about. But if you think about what happened after the glaciers left, this was just kind of a grassy area, and the trees slowly came in. Dr. Berg at the refuge did some work, and they have it down as to when all the species came, when the alder came, and when the birch came, and when the spruce.
Can they narrow it down to the point of knowing whether they marched down from the Anchorage area or whether they somehow jumped across water? And because I mean, the climates you would think would be maybe a little more amenable down south, but then again, where are they coming from down south?
Right. I know for sure that the spruce, the birch that we have, all came from the interior.
Okay.
And they've done that because they've done some DNA work, right, and genetics. And this is really cool because researchers all over the world are coming to Alaska to get birch seeds because our birch are so much older than other birches in the whole in the area.
Really?
They're like 40 times more genetically diverse. And that was because during the last ice age, the interior, the Tanana area, was not glaciated.
Oh.
And it was, and it had birch trees. So our birch trees here are really adaptable to climate change because they have so much genetic diversity.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, so, absolutely. So. Well, way to go, birch. All right.
Right. And the spruce came in similarly that way too, except for the when you go down to Homer, you have more Sitka spruce, mm-hmm. and that's actually spruce that came up from southeast.
And that is that a continuation of what you see over in Seward as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And that's changing because now we're having hybridization between the Sitka spruce, which you find in Seldovia, and as you march up the Kenai Peninsula, it turns more into white spruce. And then when you get to Cooper Landing, then it kind of turns almost all white spruce. Then you get back to Moose Pass, then you're going back to that Lutz spruce.
Right.
And okay. then when you head to Anchorage, it's all white spruce.
Are those boundaries starting to change as far as where you see those types of trees or the predominance of trees?
Yeah, they are. And I think that is not related to climate change. I think it's just natural, you know, genes that are moving around the landscape. And that kind of spells a lot of issues we have with our spruce here now, because there's some thought out there that the Sitka spruce hybrid, which is called Lutz spruce, is actually less tolerant to drought.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Sitka, you know, down in southeast.
They like it wet, those Sitka
right.
spruce.
Right, Homer's very wet. You know, we're not that wet anymore.
Right. Okay. So when you have a fire like we have had the last several years, some pretty large scale fires, as those forests start to grow back, are they going to grow back the way that we have known them, or are there going to be changes in how those are reforesting?
That's a good question, because the last fire we had, the Swan Lake fire, that burned so hot that kind of threw everything that what you expect to happen. You know, this burned way down deep into the ground. You know, we've heard all of the reports on fire pits, and there's not a lot of seed that's left that could actually come back. Most of our forest fires in Alaska just burn the trees, and they leave the duff and the lingonberries grow back within a year or so. So we're going to see possibly a change. We'll see. Might see more aspen. Might see more cottonwood. Any seed that can blow in will probably, but time will tell on that.
Okay. And some of that was pretty mature black spruce that, especially out in the Sterling Flats, that stuff hadn't burned since, what, like 47, I think, was the last fire that went through there.
Yeah. And in some ways, that's really good because, you know, we have this tall grass here, this Canada blue joint grass, mm-hmm. you know, grows head tall. Scary when you're walking through it and you know there's a bear nearby. You can see a bear in the forest. You can't see it in the grass.
True.
But it got rid of that. So there won't be the grass competition. Time will tell whether we'll even get a good fireweed crop.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
because usually fireweed's beautiful the first year after a fire. Yeah. Oh, so here, inside information, just for me, you listeners, go walk into the other room for a minute. What is this going to mean for morels?
I don't know.
All right, listeners, you can come back.
Yeah. I, you know, the old places, yeah. Well, actually, the important thing, and I know we're not talking about fire, but we might as well jump right in.
We've gone that direction.
Yeah, we're already there. When you have a fire, it doesn't burn completely the same way everywhere.
Right, it's patchy.
There's patchy. Yeah. So I can tell you, in the right patches, there will be morels.
Okay.
Okay.
You can't tell me where those patches are going to be.
I would go find some place that you're not walking through something that feels like flour.
You know, oh, good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You need some brown stuff, not some light tan stuff under your feet.
All right. Well, I've got some mushroom hunting to do then this coming spring. Okay, so that's kind of forests in general. Right. Some of the other trends I think we're seeing on the Kenai Peninsula is the change in tree line up in Alpine.
Right.
Right? Is that slowly creeping up the sides of the mountains?
Yep, that's been going up. Students at APU did a great research project, and they looked at old aerial photography, and you see it, that it's creeping up. And they're also are also getting bigger and taller too. I mean, usually those Krumholtz areas, which are cold areas where plants grow, they're warmer and they have a longer growing season. That's probably the major factor.
Okay.
That there's less snow cover. This year we'll probably have lots of snow cover, but you never know what our spring. I mean, I'm expecting it to warm up soon.
Yeah, you would think anytime. I mean, last February I think was pretty dang warm. Personally, I'm going to be happy skiing till May, but I understand if the rest of you are over it at this point.
Yeah, and that'll have a really good effect on our local trees having this deep snow cover.
They like water, and they have not gotten enough of it lately.
Right, and it hides them from the moose.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. So you can always tell how deep the snow was the previous year if you walk into our forest, as you see where the browse line is for the moose. They tend to crop it.
Right. And then what about seasonality? That's not the right word for it. Changes in timing of the seasons. Is that affecting our trees at all? It seems like it gets maybe warmer a little sooner or stays warmer a little later. So we're talking before the show about how some trees are triggered by daylight, which obviously the axis of the earth has not changed, and how some other trees are kind of triggered to start their cycle by warmth. So are we seeing impacts of that at all, or are they still doing their thing just whenever they get their signal?
Well, you're right. There's different trees react differently. And the example I like to give when I folks is that, you know, we had a flush of pussy willows this year.
Oh, yeah.
In December.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. They were just, the buds were bursting, and I brought pussy willows home, and everybody says, oh, where'd you get those? I said, up in the pass. But then you have other trees. Well, the willows are affected by temperature.
So if you have a warm up, then they'll start doing their thing and then realize they need to question their life choices next month when it gets cold again.
And they're adapted to it. So yes, we're not going to lose all of our pussy willows.
Yeah, willows seem a pretty hardy. Yeah. Willows and alders, I think, are probably going to live through an apocalypse.
Right. Pretty soon we're going to be hitting birch tapping season. And our birch trees are interesting, and they even surprised everybody a couple of years ago. But sap flows based on day length.
Okay, so not temperature.
Right, like maple trees will actually start producing sap based on temperature. You need freeze-thaw and freeze-thaw. And the earlier it happens for maple trees, the longer your birch tapping season is.
Hmm.
So if you only have your freeze-thaw late in the spring, you have a very short season because now the leaves will come out. But birches they do it almost exactly to the week.
Really? No matter what the temperature is, no matter what the snow cover is. Right. You would think it'd be just for sheer viscosity and hydraulics, that it would be a warmth-related thing.
And it's great to have rules. You know, we've said this. It's all based on day length, the amount of red wavelength light. I think that's what triggers it. But 3 years ago, the birch tappers or producers, birch syrup producers, missed there because it happened earlier. And it was the first time that the birch tree did not behave the way it was.
Interesting.
We had a really warm spring a few years ago. Huh. So it totally threw that out. But then following years, it was again at the same time. So you can be tapping birch trees with 3 feet of snow on the ground, or you can be tapping birch trees when, you know, the winter greens are coming out. Some of those lower shrubs are turning green.
Yeah, I think in April, I'm not sure what the magic week window is, but sometime in April, you can start doing the birch trees. Okay.
So you might need snowshoes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Maybe not.
And then, so as far as particular species of trees that we have around here, we might as well stick on the birch for a little while, issues that trees are having.
Right.
So birch trees, I think one of the classic things with birch trees around here, it looks healthy for 20 feet in the air, and then the top part of that tree just falls off, like they just kind of decompose where they stand sometimes. So is that a natural phenomenon, or is that something going wrong with that tree?
That's a natural phenomenon, and it's also because of certain actions. The really old birch trees, they just rot from the top down. So you'll be out in the field, no no logging, nothing's happened, and you'll see the big trees. And these, some of these are like 16, 20 inches in diameter.
Yeah, we get some good-sized birch trees around here.
Actually, just a little side note, our birch trees aren't supposed to live that long.
Usually,
in the lower 48, they'll live to about 100, 125 years. In Alaska, they go up to almost 200 years old.
Huh.
And it threw me when I moved here that these birches would actually live that long. So that's a natural dying process. What we see here, especially around for homeowners, you'll see there's beautiful birch trees. They bought this home. It looked great. And next thing you know, the top of the tree is dying out. And whenever I would see these, people would say, well, what's wrong with my birch tree? And I says, well, number one, it's probably your driveway. And they said, what do you mean? It says, you notice the birch trees near the driveway are flagging. That's what we call it when you have the dead limbs. So and if you go far away from them, birch trees are not flagging. And it's when you do any construction and you sever some roots, it allows pathogens and rot to get in.
Oh, okay.
And actually, some trees die from the top down and some die from the bottom up, and birch trees die from the top down. And right. Spruce actually died that way too, naturally.
So it's not necessarily they need to have X feet or something of roots. It's just that if they're cut, then that can be a vector for pathogens to get in there.
Right. One or two cuts isn't too bad, but you know, when you take a backhoe and you put 3 feet of gravel down to give yourself a great driveway, you tend to sever. And nobody wants to lose these trees, which is interesting because developers will sell homes based on the nice wooded condition.
Right.
But then some others will say, well, we want to take them all out because all of the trees are going to die. So, so there's two ways to look at how people look at housing developments.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things that developers can do to save trees. But, you know, things that you shouldn't do, don't dig around them. Don't run heavy equipment over your tree roots. That crushes them.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Don't put 6 inches of soil on top of a tree around the roots. The roots actually exchange air. And if you bury your roots, you'll suffocate them, and that's another way your tree will die.
And is this for all trees that we have around here, or are we still talking particularly birch?
All trees.
All trees. Okay. Yeah.
And the birch and the spruce also suffer from root damage. And for everybody who's seen the tree that's fallen over, a lot of our beetle kill trees now, they're falling over, and you find out that they're actually rotten inside. So that was a stressor the tree had. And that was associated with root damage or old age.
Right. Okay. So we have now mentioned spruce trees, but before we go down that branch, I'm sorry, I said I wasn't going to do the tree puns. Are there other birch things that we should be aware of? Are they having any insect issues or any other blight issues that homeowners or property owners can keep an eye out for?
Yeah, we have one that shows up fairly often. It's kind of a birch aphid, and
birch aphids.
Yes,
like aphids aren't obnoxious enough in regular plants. Now they're bothering the trees.
Well, they do suck the life out of the tree. By the way, that's another bad problem. but they're a real nuisance. You park your car underneath, and you got to spend your time trying to get all the aphid goo off of your. And you, typically those don't kill birches. They set them back a little bit. But we have a new insect, and I'm trying to think of the name now. It's a birch. I think it's the brown birch leaf miner.
Oh, leaf miner. Okay.
Yeah. And those are the ones that make the little galleries. You see the leaves, and they have little trails through them. And you see them a lot with aspen. And actually, if you ever see an aspen tree, those are easy because they look rather cute. And those typically don't do much to the aspen trees. But little tidbit, if you want to amaze everybody, the leaf miners stay on either the top side of the leaf or the bottom side of the leaf. They don't go between both
really?
Sides. So if you turn them over, you'll notice there's a difference between the little tunnels.
Oh, interesting. So, that's very particular of them.
So that's an insect that came in from on tree growing stock, which is important to know because every time you plant a tree that you pick up at a nursery, you may be bringing something in that's not here.
I think gardeners have gotten the message with like potatoes and things. We all understand like you need to get a Alaska sourced potato. Don't just go throwing whatever from the grocery store. You don't know what you're introducing. So trees, then we need to be careful about that too.
Yeah. And there's, and when trees come in from outside, they usually have a phytosanitary certificate.
Sure,
and
they do.
And I know all about those because where I used to work in Kenai, we were the first USDA phone number, and it would ring at my desk. So I would get these questions. I need a phytosanitary certificate because I need to bring these plants in.
Okay.
So, but anyway, it's a certification that says that the tree does not have any pathogens in it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of, and it's, you know, it's, you don't need to worry. But like everything else, just like our coronavirus, eventually these things are going to show up.
Right.
So anyway, so this bronze leaf, birch leaf miner showed up in Anchorage. And next thing you know, it started showing up on the Kenai. And it showed up first in Cooper Landing, especially at the Russian River. Then it showed up at Fred Meyer's in Soldotna. And it was... And it was, and I live really close to the to Freddy's, and it was my trees had it.
Oh, interesting.
So I started looking into it, and I talked to an entomologist, and they said, "Oh yeah, you have that." And those were all the Anchorage fishermen are coming down from.
I was just going to ask: are these things just like blowing in the wind, or are they getting picked up and hitchhiking from somewhere?
And stopped off, and that's why you'll see it. And it's there's a pest they actually brought in parasitic wasp into Anchorage, which is another story in itself.
Are no good.
That actually kills that one particular insect, and they tested it. You know, they did trials. They put these things in tents, and they didn't eat anything else. They just, so we will end up with that parasitic wasp that only eats leaf miners. So it's a success story, but that's I guess it is.
There's a lid for every pot, as it were.
You're right.
But, so I'm looking up pictures of this as you're talking. So they're calling it amber-marked birch leaf miner in Alaska in particular. So it's not that the whole leaf turns brown and falls off. You get spots of kind of decay and dry, crunchy spots in the middle with, like you're saying, those little tunnels that you can see that they're forming. So if you're getting some spotty leaves on your birch tree and take a closer look and you see some tunneling in there, is there anything you can do for it at that point?
There's really nothing you can do.
Bring in your own set of parasitic wasps and hope for the best.
And these are, they did this first in Edmonton, and that's where the city of Anchorage got the idea. So they went to Edmonton and got these wasps, brought them up here to see how, number one, you don't want to be importing these every year. So they wanted to find out if they could overwinter.
Oh, okay.
And so they do overwinter, and they do only attack the leaf miner.
Okay.
So it's kind of, so eventually they will show up here. So.
Okay. So is there, when you have an issue like the leaf miner with the tree, I guess the question I'm stumbling my way toward is, at what point does it behoove you to just take the tree down? And at what point is there something you can do for a birch tree that's starting to show signs of either you have a driveway that was too close to it or something has happened to it? How long do you let that go, or when should you address your grief processing for your tree?
As I tell everybody, usually on a nice sunny day when it's not too cold and there isn't too many bugs, you should cut it down. But that's just anyway. The important thing is, if the tree has the potential to cause any damage, if it can hit your house, if it can hit a power line, if it can fall down, you know, you should get it done as soon as you can. Now, if the tree is not going to fall on anything, you know, I tell everybody there's a value in a dead tree, you know, and we've seen it right now. We've had an increase in woodpeckers.
Oh, yes, we have.
And that's a function of having a lot of our dead spruce and our dying birch, too, by the way.
I really wish they were better at staying on those trees instead of wood siding on your house.
I know. But I've got the same problem. You can only chase them away so much.
Yeah.
You know? But that provides a function. And then when the tree actually falls over, then it provides another function, because that just recycles the nutrients back into the soil. And our trees, actually, once they fall on the ground, they actually become a nursery site for more trees. And if you're in the Kenai Soldotna area, you look at these big old birch trees, and you'll see that a lot of these big birch trees were growing. They're all pedestaled. They look like the roots are sticking out.
Oh, right.
And they're kind of hollow underneath that. That's a sign that the tree actually started growing on a deadfall tree.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So you look at these as these dead trees that are laying on the ground, absorbing moisture. They become this wonderful rooting material. And it's kind of like raised beds for your tree seedlings. It's already got 6 or 7 inches above the grass, so it's beating out the grass early in the season. It's warmer, just like a raised bed is.
That makes sense.
So removing all of our dead trees actually has a negative effect. You know, everybody talks about after our fires, say, oh, we need to go take all these trees down. We need to salvage them. Yeah, it's great. Get all the firewood you want. But there's a value in actually leaving a lot of those there because they provided, you know, it recycles carbon back into the soil.
Right. I mean, this system has developed long before people and homeowners with our cars that we like to park under trees were ever around. So,
right. And you grow really neat stuff. I mean, it's great for squirrels. I mean, a lot of birds will come back. You know, the spruce hens love to get up on dead trees and live ones too.
Okay. Yep. We are coming up on the bottom of the hour here, so we're going to take a couple-minute break. I'm Jenny Nyman. This is the Kenai Conversation. We're talking to Mitch Michaud about trees, really all things trees, a little bit wildfire. Who knows where we're going to go next? Stay tuned. And we are back. This is KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. This is the Kenai Conversation. I am Jenny Nyman, and I'm talking to Mitch Michaud, who is a civiculturist. I like that word. Otherwise known as, what's the difference between a civiculturist and a forester?
Forester is more involved in the business of trees. It's growing them, planting them, getting them done, getting them cut down, selling them. Silviculturists usually just work with foresters can be silviculturists, and silviculturists can also be foresters. So it's more of a specialty, I guess.
All right. Well, you're a tree guy for the purposes of, because silviculturist is going to stick in my brain probably till about noon today, and then that's going to be supplanted by some minutia. So. Tree expert, tree grief counselor for people's yards and properties that are having issues with local trees.
Yeah, when I first got here about 20 years ago, it was to deal with the spruce bark beetle issue we had on the peninsula. And when I got here, it was too late. So that's when I became a tree counselor. I told everybody, I said, you know, there'll be a time that you're going to complain about the trees that took the places of the ones that died.
Yep.
And today I noticed it driving into the KDLL here. It says, you know, I used to be able to spot this place really good off of the highway. And the trees have grown up. And it's been 20 years now. So.
Yeah, it's incremental, but they do actually, we have some that are pretty quick growing around here.
Right. A lot of people ask me what trees they should plant. And spruce, and I always mention white spruce because it's very well adapted. We talked about the phenology, about how the timing of the tree growth. It's very tolerant to drought stress. It's tolerant to cold, and it actually grows fast. Once you get it up about 4 or 5 feet, you'll get, you know, if it's watered well, you'll get two feet of growth on a spruce trees. And there's not a lot of exotics that will do that well.
Right.
That well.
And there's some you were mentioning that. So if you have some property, you've lost a bunch of trees, you want to plant some trees that are going to do well here. That is one of them, but there's some that you would advise staying away from, correct?
There's one, and this one is always, it's a controversial tree because it's one that's near to many, many people's hearts.
It's purdy.
It's purdy. It's the bird cherry. They also call it a Mayday tree.
Mm-hmm.
Latin name is Prunus pedaeus. And just recently, the state of Alaska has put a regulation that prevents the sale of them commercially. So if you want to go dig one up at your neighbor's place and move it to your house, you can do that. You're not going to get fined by the tree police.
Your neighbor might not be happy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe he or she wants to get
there you
to,
go.
To get rid of them. One of the reasons is they're finding now that with They're actually from China. That's where they came from, and they do really well in warmer temperatures. And they're in Anchorage. There's the one particular park, something Moon Park.
Craters of the Moon or something like that. Yeah,
something like that. And the professional society I belong to, Society of American Foresters. They helped plant those trees there right after the earthquake. And it was all, you know, we do things for good intentions.
Yep.
And then you wake up and now there are creeks in Anchorage that have the bird cherry is taking over. And they're finding that it's affecting the salmon growth.
Because they have something not so good in them, right?
That one's a little, it's the leaves fall into the water and the things like the mayflies and the caddisflies and the little macro invertebrates don't like the leaves, so they don't build. They don't build the right little like insect structures.
So it kind of is like a sterilization in whatever water they're falling into. Okay.
And these little critters are these macros are the things that the small salmon eat.
But they're not good for moose, right? Isn't there something in them that is bueno for the moose?
Yeah, there's a cyanide compound in the leaves and in the twigs. And if you ever want to know if you have one, there's two ways to identify the bird cherry. So you wait until the spring when they just become beautiful and then you're not.
They are really beautiful.
Or what you do is you break a branch and you smell it and it smells like bitter almond. And if you're really brave, you won't die or get sick. You taste it, and it tastes like almond.
Okay.
Really, really bitter. And what happens is that in the spring, when moose haven't eaten a lot, they'll finally go and eat these bird cherries.
They turn into toddlers. I'm just going to put this in my mouth and see what happens.
And typically, moose will not eat bird cherry, and that's why we've planted them all over the area.
Because they're nice ornamentals that don't get mowed down.
They don't get mowed
until
down.
Until they do.
Yeah, until they do. And then at that point, if it's a moose that's been stressed, if it's a younger moose and it eats too much of it, there's been some cases. I think there's been some that have died here on the Kenai, but in Anchorage, definitely they've. So it's not like the moose population is going to get impacted by bird cherry, but it's really kind of, we have so few of them that, losing one or two on your doorstep is not a great idea.
All right, so no bird cherry / May Day trees. Right. Are there other tree recommendations, good or bad?
Most of the trees that are bad in the lower 48, if you plant them here, won't live too long. And that's one of the things that I tell folks. We have climate change, but we're still going to get temperatures that are going to get close to 30 below zero.
Right. We might not get as many days of that as we used to 20, 30 years ago, but it can still happen.
So if you have this beautiful, there's a crimson King Red maple. It's a variant of a Norway maple.
It sounds lovely.
It's huge leaves that are about 6 to 8 inches in diameter. And there's a beautiful one in Seldovia. You go to Seldovia and it's bright red. It stays red. Crimson red,
is just a little bit warmer than we are up here. Yeah.
And you could grow those here. But, you get a day that, this year, if you had one and if it wasn't protected, it would have probably been zapped when it got really cold.
Mm.
It's great to grow them, but it's, think about planting a tree and by the time it gets to the nice size that you can enjoy it, it dies.
Yeah, probably not worth your while. Yeah. And there's, high tunnels if you want to. There's people who have plum trees, apple trees. Is there a kiwi? I think I've heard there's a kiwi tree somewhere in somebody's high tunnel. So
I know somebody grew a peach tree. And, I guess they got two peaches, which was good because the husband and wife didn't have to fight over who got the peach. But that's one of the things that's coming up. And apple trees are doing so much better.
And they've been hybridized to do better in our temperatures as well. Right. So some people have luck with apple trees just outside, not even in a high tunnel.
Yep. I got bushels of apples. More applesauce than, we're going to eat all the applesauce by the time the winter's over. Those are great, great trees to plant. And you'll see a lot what cities are doing. City of Soldotna and Kenai are now planting crab apple trees instead of planting bird cherry.
You also get the pretty blooms in the spring.
And you get crab apples. And this year was a great crab apple year. We were actually harvesting, I know in Soldotna, there was folks coming over to the folks at City Hall saying, can we pick the crab apples in your in your trees.
And then they, at the end of the year, if they don't get picked, they ferment and the moose eat them. And that's a different problem,
yeah,
but
a different problem
probably
more.
Not as deadly as the birch cherry trees
or,
are.
Or so. We've got some wonderful birds right now that are out feeding on all those frozen crab apples.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think of the one. It'll come to me. People call them red poles, but they're not.
Oh, right.
It's got a little yellow band. Maybe a caller can come in. And...
yeah, if anyone has questions for Mitch, 283-8414.
Right.
So we talked birch. We need to get to spruce, but maybe quick we can do a detour on aspen and poplar, which are two of our other resident species. What's going on with them these days?
First of all, the moose eat them.
We do have a caller. So, hello, caller. Can you hear me? All right. What's your question?
I got a question and a comment. The apple trees, the crab apple trees, can you take other kinds of apples and pass them on? So you've got several kinds or maybe two or three kinds of apples growing on that acclimated crab apple tree and your applesauce. Have you ever made fruit leather with it? I'll take my answer over the line. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I think the question was, can you put other apples onto other apple trees.
Franken trees. Can you do Franken trees?
You can.
All right.
It's a wonderful thing. And we have a group, there's an Alaska Apple Growers Association, and you can get on the internet and figure out how to do it. And most apple growers in the area will actually share with you the little cuttings. And you know, what you do is you have a tree and then you just put different branches and you can have different kinds.
That's fun.
And that's how we're able to grow apples here, because the rootstock is a kind of a crab apple variant, and it's what kills most of our apple trees is the roots freeze.
Oh,
so what they do is, so they found some wonderful, there was a fellow named from Fairbanks, his name was Claire, and he traveled all over northern Canada looking for rootstock that was cold tolerant. And he had a successful business selling apple trees in Fairbanks.
All right. So Franken trees, yes. And then the other part of the question is, have you tried turning some of that applesauce into fruit leather?
No, we're just busy eating the applesauce.
You're just drudgery spooning applesauce.
It's really good, too. I didn't put any sugar in it, and it's just great.
Excellent.
I have three different varieties. I have Norlin, which is a common tree here. It's an early apple, and every year you get some ripe fruit off of it. And then I have a Harrelson and a Wolf River, and these are old heritage varieties that are found in Minnesota.
And we've got another caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Jenny.
All right. What is your question?
Thank you for your guest. I think he was referring to maybe the Bohemian waxwings that eat the berries.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we were struggling through that. I'm like, I know there's a bird person out there who's going, you idiots.
No. It's just I so much enjoy watching the birds on the trees up here. And that's actually a question I have, a few questions. Actually, I'm going to get rid of my Mayday trees now that you've said that those are poisonous. I kind of knew that, but I wasn't really sure about the intricacies of all of that. I also wanted to let you know, not only do the moose enjoy the crab apples, but I had a nice little black bear in my yard last fall that like pretty much ripped down one of my crab apple trees.
No kidding.
He totally feasted on it. It was I got some really good pictures of it. And I live up off of the Skyline area is where I'm at. But my other question is, food for the birds. That's what I'm interested in as far as like berries and trees that can be helpful for the bird population. Because, I mean, nationwide, as we know, in North America, we have lost a tremendous number of migratory birds, like 3 billion, they estimate, from the 70s. So that's my question, is bird food for trees that provide berries and bird food for wintering, especially because it is pretty hard up here for all the wildlife to get through some of the winters up here.
Anyway. All right. Well, I will turn that over to Mitch. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. There is a great tree, and there's a native version and there's an exotic version of it. It's called a mountain ash, and it grows here, and it's, And you'll see them in Soldotna. They have them at the Y. I think there's a planting there. And they put out a berry. It's a sorbus species.
Kind of a red berry. You get the like kind of lilac-shaped blooms with lots of little flowers in them, and then they turn into red berry clusters.
Right. And there's and the European mountain ash, so the only difference is it's got 18 little leaflets, and the American mountain ash has, I think, like 14. So it's an extra. So, but when you buy it at the store, you can pick it up at most of our nurseries, and it's so that's a great tree. And there are some other cherry trees you can plant. So the one that the bird cherry and the Mayday tree are just one species. So there's a couple of others that you can plant. There's Prunus virginiana. That's the American choke cherry, and that one has not been found to be invasive or cause deaths to salmon and to moose.
All right, excellent. So mountain ash and choke cherry.
Yep.
Cool. Okay, so we are getting back up to the top of the hour. We got about 15 minutes left. I feel like we should hit on spruce, because obviously that's the spruce bark beetle. We're going through another hatch outbreak of those. So is there anything you can do to, and I know this is a multi-part answer, but if you have like a couple trees that you really want to save in your yard, if you have, you want to save all your spruce in your yard, hate to break it to you, probably not possible. But if you've got like a couple that you really feel connected to and want to save, there are some ways to go about that, right?
Yep, there is. And I've been answering this question for 20 years, so I can do a quick answer. Yes, you can save them, but nothing's perfect. So we'll start that way. There are some insecticides you can use. You can look them up. It's the active ingredient is right carbaryl. So it's advertised under different names, but you can look at it. But carbaryl is the active ingredient. Problem with carbaryl, it's very toxic to salmon. So if you're near a river, if you're near a storm drain, or if you wherever there's a possibility that will end up in the water system. Now, if you're in the middle of nowhere and you have some wonderful spruce trees, the carbaryl could also be used without it, because it doesn't really move that much. It's transported by water.
And is this the one that's kind of topical? You can spray it on the roots, or is this the one that you inject?
That's the one you spray on the tree trunk.
On the trunk, right? Yeah. Now.
And what happens is the beetle flies in and says, "Hey, this is a great place. I'm just going to raise a family here of about a couple hundred little worms." And they'll go through it, and as it digs into the tree, it will ingest that active ingredient and kill it. And then its offsprings, when they leave the next year, hundreds of them will go out. They will also eat the same chemical, and it will kill them too. So it has and it lasts a couple of years because it's right on the bark, so the rain doesn't wash it off.
Okay.
There are other things. There's some hormones. Pheromones, hormones. Well, it's all we're talking about. Bug breeding here.
Birds and bees, everybody.
Birds and bees. So the pheromone, a tree gives off a pheromone, and once a tree is infected, and especially in the spring, if it has any damage to it, if there's a wound to it, or if it got previously infected the previous year but wasn't killed, it puts out a pheromone that says, I'm dying, I'm going to take it for the team. And there was an interesting book called The Secret Life of Trees, and they talk about how trees communicate with each other, and that whole story is great, and they kind of do. And yes, this tree will, but it's more of a evolutionary thing, because they're really
they're not just like chatty. Yeah. They're not talking about you or anything.
And we can talk about I've read some new stuff about trees talking to each other. I think they do work as a community. So, but anyway, so the tree is saying, I'm dying. So they attract all these beetles. Likewise, if you have some firewood near your house that you cut a green tree down, and you cut it down this winter and you leave it next to your wood pile, leave it underneath your spruce trees, it will attract more spruce beetles.
So attract them away from the trees that you want to save is the idea there, kind of strategically. Right. All right, we're not going to put up signs saying no beetles allowed at your property, but you can kind of direct them.
Direct them to, you can bait them, right? Typically, you want your neighbor to bait them so they stay away from yours. But what also happens is that once a tree gets impacted by beetles, it puts out an anti, don't come here, there's no room for you.
The beetles do. They have their own pheromone that say, this tree's taken, no room for you.
Go somewhere else.
Go find your own.
And that that chemical is available now, and you can get it. And that's some of these chemicals that they'll inject to the tree. And it puts out, it's called an anti-aggregant pheromone. And they tried it in 20 years ago, and it didn't work well. And nobody, and now they're trying to, they think that maybe it was too cold 20 years ago for that anti-aggregant. And now it seems to be working. So, but it's also very, 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 very expensive.
Right. Kind of cost prohibitive. So, but again, if you have like one or two that you want to save, it might be cost effective for you to do that, but probably not something you're going to want to treat a whole yard or all your property.
Right. We had, there was an individual a few years ago that was wrapping their tree up with shrink wrap.
Oh,
and that was
to keep them from burrowing in. Yeah,
right.
Because they do tend to like a certain part of the tree, right, to burrow in.
And they'll go to the first 16, you know, 20 feet. But then again, if you've got millions of beetles, you've got millions of beetles, and you know, it will, they've been known to even infect black spruce.
Oh.
Right, and they've gone after blue spruce. But they prefer white spruce.
Right. I mean, they're voracious and
And all through North America, we have spruce bark beetles. In Maine, where I grew up, where there was an infestation 25 years ago, and it was essentially attacking older and dying trees. It's part of the process of life.
Yep. But when you're mid increase in the hatch as we've had lately, I mean, they'll go for anything they can get. They're no longer just looking for the old dying trees.
And a lot of the younger trees, I mean, you'll walk around the forest, you'll see dead trees that were attacked, and you'll see a tree right next to it that wasn't. Mm-hmm. So it's not like every spruce tree is going to die. And if you're lucky, you got some little spruce trees underneath growing, and you know, those typically don't get killed. And we're not at the level that we were 25 years ago. There's just not enough spruce trees.
Right. They just didn't grow back enough from 25 years ago. And I've heard one of the best things, if you don't want to invest in tree-to-tree life-saving measures, jaws of life for trees, one of the best things you can do is just water them and keep them healthy. Like you're saying, don't drive heavy equipment over them. Don't dump a bunch of soil on them. The healthier the tree is, the better chance it has at survival. And I know we think about watering our gardens and our ornamentals and our flowers and all of that stuff, but I don't know that we, especially if we're not big lawn people, that we think of watering our native trees. But it's been a little drier here some of these summers than we usually get, and they don't really like dry so much.
This past year was interesting with the spruce bark beetle that we had. There's stages, the tree gets infected, it's the cambium, the soft tissue gets eaten up by the little grubs, and then the following winter they turn red.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd wake up in the spring and you see these trees would be this rusty color, and that was the red stage, and then they'd go into the gray stage when the needles fall off. Last year was so dry that the tree that got impacted or infected by beetle turned red in the same season.
Oh, wow. Just because it was struggling in general
it was dry, so the tree was just essentially... And what happens when a tree is actually stressed, it starts taking away carbohydrates and sugars from the needles.
Mm.
And the tree was so stressed, it was just trying to keep itself alive, so it just sucked the life out of its limbs.
That's kind of sad to watch that process. So similar question with spruce trees as birch trees. If there is an infestation, is there a benefit of taking that tree out at some point to interrupt the beetle life cycle, or once it's infested, just let it do its thing?
If you see your tree has become red, or if you look at it and it has numerous holes in it, I tell people, it says just get a sharp knife or an axe and just flake off the bark and see if there's what's inside. But once it's turned red, the tree is actually dead. So you're not actually making it worse by leaving standing dead trees. You're going to attract some really cool other things that are going to show up.
At that point, the beetles have come and gone, and you're not going to... I think the thought process behind that is if you can take the tree out of your yard while the larvae are still in there, maybe they won't hatch and get your next tree kind of thing. But you're saying at that point, it's too far gone and... that cycle has happened.
Yeah. One thing I think is going to be interesting this year is since the trees actually dried out quicker, the cold temperatures we had that we were having currently may actually put a big dent in the beetle.
Oh, interesting.
Because there's no like antifreeze protecting these like tree sap sugars that are keeping the trees from freezing.
Right.
So it may, you know, we'll see what happens. Yeah.
And you don't, I mean, you might see a tree first year of infestation. You don't necessarily want to jump the gun and take that one out because it might live. They can live through. Yep. One, at least, and if they're otherwise healthy and don't get attacked again, you might not lose that tree.
One of the ways that is you look at the tree and you look at the sap, because when you drill, the beetle drills a hole in the tree, the sap will actually push it out. And that's why you water it, because it has more potential to make sap if you have. And if you see the sap is running clear, then you know that the beetle never got inside.
Oh, okay.
And if you see the sap is running like a reddish color, that means that you have beetles that are in your tree and they're breeding and they're throwing the right excrement out. And that's why you see red sap. So if you see red sap coming out of your tree, then you know the tree is essentially done for.
Okay.
Firewood.
Well, I hate to end on that note, but we're getting up to the top of the hour. Is there any other tree tips that you would give people in our last couple minutes here?
I tell everything. This is a new thing. You've heard the whole thing from Davos, the international summit they occurred, and it was discussed about planting 1 trillion trees would kind of solve all of our carbon in the atmosphere issues. And so I questioned that, and I spent a good couple of days reading the research papers, and you know, and the numbers are right. If we all planted, and then I said, well, how many trees is a trillion trees? And I took it all down, and I said, based on what we do in the U.S., it comes down to 110 trees per person.
Oh wow!
And you know, and some people have two reactions to that. It's like 110 trees. That's a lot of trees. And then other people say, that's not a lot of trees. I could plant 110.
Well, you can seed by seed and sapling by sapling, but to have those turn into mature trees takes a little more space than most people's acreage in their backyard would be.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And the best time to plant a tree, this is an old adage, is today.
Right.
Or on May 18th, which is Arbor Day in Alaska.
All right. Well, if all of the snow is gone by then and we can actually dig into the ground, then let's plant some trees for Arbor Day. So it is coming up on 11 a.m. Mitch Michaud, thank you so much for being here. This has been fascinating.
You're welcome.
I could talk trees for many, many more hours, but we do have our regular programming to get back to. And quick programming note, many of you listeners have probably noticed some repeats on the air at KDLL. So our automation system, which lives down in Homer, we share that service with KBBI, died a fairly catastrophic death 2 weekends ago.
No beetles.
And no beetles involved. I wouldn't be surprised if some virus weren't in there somewhere. But we are aware of it. We really apologize. Unfortunately, sometimes it came down to like, well, are we going to have a repeat or are we going to have dead air? And it you never really knew until the show started. Like, yeah, we played that one. So we seem to have it up and limping along a little better. We weren't noticing a lot of problems early this week or over the weekend. If you are still hearing issues, please do let us know. We don't always notice it. It's a evolving situation. It's going to be a very costly fix, unfortunately. So just wanted to let listeners know. We apologize for that, and we're trying to come up with some solutions for you. So on that also not totally awesome note, but we do need to move along. So, Mitch, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks.
All right. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.